New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. For all of our WPFW audience, we welcome you. Today, the latest on how we can reduce the inflammation that leads to heart disease. We'll also take on how we can cut cancer by 50%. Also, what happens when we have a positive attitude or a negative attitude? And are you getting enough vitamin D? Better, because it can impact you, and I'll tell you how. And you know that weed in the lawn in the summertime, in the spring, dandelion? Well, it gets scientific acceptance as a very important antioxidant and a novel cancer therapy. On our issue segment of our program today, Preying on the Poor by Barbara Ehrenreich, how our government and corporations use the poor in America to make money. Also, from economic collapse, turn out the lights. The largest cities in the United States are becoming cesspools of filth, decay, and wretchedness. Why? What can we do about it? The Rise and Fall of American Childhood by Colin Green from Alternet. Do you remember, as I did when we were growing up, all the different benefits of what it was to be baby boomer? What's it like today? Have we begun the fall after the rise of 40 years of really helping children? Now we're actually harming their development? Then our guest in the second part of our program will be one of the most outspoken critics of how we have corporatized and privatized and industrialized everything to the detriment of the average American. He is Gerald Salonte. He is one of today's pioneers in what is called trend strategy. So we're going to talk to him today just about, well, the campaign, why it's not a choice of anything other than the worst of two, and what would be a better choice, and what can we do based upon what he sees coming at us. Remember, Gerald is the guy who accurately predicted, well in advance on my radio program, in great detail, the crisis, the economic subprime crisis of 2007 and 8. I'll get him to predict some stuff today. So that's our program. I will not be taking calls today because we have so much information to share, but I'll be happy to take it tomorrow when we're going to talk about why psychiatry is just a fraud and all those diagnosing and treating of people. We shouldn't allow that to happen. So we're going to deal with that. Let's begin. And we always begin by giving you the latest on health and healing. And here we go with stress and lifestyle. We know that heart disease, cancer, arthritis, fibromyalgia, dementia, diabetes, all of these have something in common. It's called inflammation. Now, inflammation is generally caused by having a highly acidic lifestyle and input, and that can mean hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizzas, the things that we eat every day and think is fine. They're not. Here's the latest on this. This is from Medical News Today. This is mainstream, done at the University of California, San Francisco. It says, degree of lifestyle stress exposure linked to inflammation in the heart. Quote, greater lifetime exposure to the stress of traumatic events was linked to a higher level of inflammation in a study with cardiovascular disease. Okay. It is the first study to examine the relationship between cumulative, meaning lifetime, stress exposure and inflammation. And it was published in Brain Behavior and Immunity. Now, here's my take on this. For the longest time, we were taught, be cool, all right? Don't get upset about stuff, because most stuff you can't change, so just let it happen, all right, and flow with it. And most people did. Then we were told, all right, everything you've worked for, everything you've built, you're now going to see, for most Americans, 250 million Americans, or two-thirds of Americans, you're going to see that just fall apart. Many baby boomers are going to wake up one day and get that phone call saying, Mom or Dad, cannot take care of themselves. They have dementia or Alzheimer's, so it's up to you to come and take care of them. You say, hold on a second. I just got, you know, my kids out of the house and through college. It's time for me now. Well, it would have been, but this happens. Or we come home one day and realize there's an eviction notice. Or we don't come home as we used to and spend time with our family and our pets and each other because we have to do a second job. Very common. Why? Well, because the profits made by most corporations are not enough for them to be happy. So they've got to reduce inventory, cut back expenditures, and human labor is a big expenditure, and get rid of those pesky unions and, of course, their entitlements. Well, you make more profit, but it means someone's no longer making a living wage, which means that to pay for their lifestyle, they've got to go work two jobs, which means when they do get home, they're stressed, they're depleted, their immune system is going to crash and burn, and they got a lot of inflammation going on. And people are not stupid. Now, people may act stupid at different times in life, but we're not stupid. And we see that the environment is, gee whiz, I don't remember being this hot, or I don't remember being this cold. I don't remember this number of hurricanes, this number of tornadoes, this number of and extreme weather events are the new norm. Because for the last 40 years, we did not pay attention and didn't want to hear about something so difficult to understand as global warming and how what we do each day, our air conditioners and the meat we eat and the dairy, are contributing to it. Because then we don't want to look in the mirror and feel any guilt. So as long as we don't pay attention to a problem, surely it can exist. But it does. And then we believe our institutions and we believe our political leaders. But we know that they lie. And we don't want to be concerned about third-party people. Even if everything we need done right, they would do it right. Getting all the money out of elections. That's right. So you can't buy your way into a position of power, so then you open the door for the people who gave you the money so they can come in and write policy. All these changes create such stress, and not to change creates even more stress. So the idea is that the more stress we're under, the greater inflammation goes on in the body, and that contributes to heart disease and diabetes and cancer. So what to do? It's simple. Begin today by to take back the power you've given to other people for the choices in your life. Let me just give you some ideas, some positive ideas, how you can feel better about life, yourself, be more optimistic, de-stress, turn off the inflammation. Start by ripping up your credit cards. Let me explain the economics of this. We keep counting as a positive part of our gross domestic product, any purchases made with credit cards. It shouldn't be considered a part of our gross domestic growth because most people using credit cards now have debt. They bought something, but now they owe something. And worse, what they bought is going to devalue and their debt is going to increase because of interest. Now you miss a payment, you're late, you have compounding interest. And on debit cards and many of the other pay loans, it could go up to 300%. So, let's stop using credit cards. Unless it's something that's absolutely a dire emergency, tear them up. Because that's how Bank America and Citigroup and Wells Fargo and JP Morgan Chase, that's how they make a lot of money, billions a year, and all those fees. Next, let's stop shopping in any box store or mall store. No more of their drug stores. No more. You can go to a compounding pharmacy. No more of their Walmarts. Because 90% of everything sold in Walmart is made in China. I can't blame the Chinese. There's nothing wrong with the Chinese people. They're trying to make a living. They're being exploited but by their own government. But, you know, what are you going to do if someone's poor over there? They're going to take whatever work they can. But they're taking away work from the United States. How much is it? Well, until last year, it was 36 factories a day closed in the United States. It had been at 16, now it's 36 per day. Let me show you the math over the last 12 years. 59,000 factories closed. Why didn't we talk about it? Because we didn't care. The people in power, buying up companies, downsizing them, loading them up with debt, taking what they brought in as their profit and letting businesses sink. Do we forget Circuit City and Linen and Things? These are just examples of some of the leverage buyout casualties. So when you don't shop in a store unless it's with product made in the USA by living wage labor, look at what you buy. And if it's made by exploiting someone else's labor somewhere else in the world, then simply on an ethical and moral basis, don't buy it. Don't buy genetically engineered food. Buy organic food. Buy local farmers market, food co-op, health food store food. Don't buy it from Whole Foods, Health Foods, because that's just another major giant corporation. And remember, these are the people who put organic 365 on all their vegetables, and then when you looked on the back, it said grown in China. Yeah, they really have our interest at stake, don't they? No, every one of those stores that opens up, all the small ethical health food stores go out of business. Isn't it time we cared for something other than just getting a deal? And also pass up all the fast food restaurants in the United States. Prepare your own food. Now, you can make a vegan hot dog or a vegan pizza with gluten-free. You can do that. You don't need to buy these unhealthy items, which are only going to contribute to disease, even if temporarily they're comfort food. Also, stop electing these people to office. The corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans have nothing to do with the historical, ethical Eisenhower conservatives or the FDR Democrats. So don't vote unless it's for third-party people like Jill Stein at the Green Party or Rocky Anderson at the Justice Party or Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party. But don't vote for the corporatization of the world. Also, don't buy anything you don't need. A home is not the American dream. For a long period of time, because there was a 2% GI Bill you could buy it on, it was inexpensive. The average home in 1945 cost only $8,000. And then once the baby boomers started to come, people began to move into the suburbs, and they got a little bigger than the 1,200 to 1,300 square feet. And then come 2000, a person's home was like an ATM machine. So they just started every day, that they had a chance, they'd say, well, I bought this house at this price, now it's worth twice as much, I just made $100,000. I can do this, this, and this. I can send my kids to private schools, I can get that third SUV. Well, no. Now you don't have any equity in your home, you have just debt. And so we've made a lot of errors in our purchases because we trusted people, we believed people, we shouldn't have. They didn't have our interest at heart. Stop watching their moronic television. What do you see when you watch these television programs? You see the worst of human nature, never the best. So let's turn those off and begin to have conversations with one another again. Turn off your cell phone. Never take it out with you. You know, there was a time when you could actually spend time listening to what someone had to say, looking them in the eyes. Today's youth have a hard time communicating unless they're twittering. Let's spend quality time with each other, with ourselves. Start to exercise. Let's pay attention to the choices we make. And then you start to see, gee whiz, I'm an independent thinker. I'm not a part of the problem. I'm part of the solution. Those are some things we can do. And we can de-stress in the process, because it's when you're doing something positive that you're not stressed. Next up, for those of you who want to have healthier hearts, try chili peppers. Well, specifically the Capsaicin, which is the active ingredient, it can lower cholesterol, increases blood flow in vessels. There was a national meeting of the American Chemical Society, and they said that spicy compounds such as capsaicin, and which are found in chili peppers, help promote healthier heart and protect against heart disease. Quote, this is from the nutrition science professor at the Chinese University in Hong Kong. Dr. Chen said, quote, our research has reinforced and expanded knowledge about how these substances in chilies work in improving heart health. That's good news. Now, you want to cut your cancer rate by half? That would be a good thing. It's not that difficult. Stop with all of the pro-inflammatory items. The red meats, the fried food, the coffee, the sodas, the artificial sweeteners. That would make an enormous difference. And then start bringing in more fiber, 50 grams of high-quality fiber, ginger, turmeric in your seasonings. That would be very good as well. Go for natural sweeteners like stevia or palm sugar, which is a natural sugar with low glycemic index. Seek out organic. Filter your tap water. And take your time eating. And don't eat a cold or hot beverage with a meal, but wait a little while after the meal. Take your vitamin C every 2 hours, about 5 to 6,000 milligrams a day in buffered form, and take quercetin, Q-U-E-R-E-C-T-I-N, the bioflavonoid, at half the amount of the vitamin C together. 25 milligrams of B-complex, 400 units of vitamin E from natural mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols, and that can help cut your cancer rate by 50%. Negative outlook leads to more illness and disease. This is from Mike Barrett. Let me quote this. A study performed by researchers from the University of Granada found that perception of experiences and occurrences across a lifetime did in fact influence perception of their own health and quality of life. According to what we have observed in our study, the most influencing dimensions is the perception of the past. A negative view of the past is highly related to worst health indicators. Furthermore, those who tend to be negative generally tend to be depressive, anxious, and present behavioral changes, all of which are negative. End quote. So, it is that an unhealthy mental state breeds unhappiness. So the way you perceive the past and handle current situations, if you bring hope and positive thoughts into this mindset today, you're far more likely to live a happy and healthy life. And finally, from our nutrition segment today, oral vitamin D supplements reduce the levels of K167 in prostate cancer cells. This is from Science Daily. This is mainstream science. And it was done by the Canadian Cancer Society from the University Health Network. And here's what it says. Quote, higher oral doses of plain vitamin D raise the level of calcitriol in prostate tissue. The higher prostate levels, a hormone made from vitamin D, correspond with lower levels of proliferation of a marker of increased cancer growth. So, we want to have a healthier prostate. Vitamin D makes a difference. One last thing. Dandelions. Here's the latest on them. Now, most people think the dandelion is just a nuisance weed. It is not. It's a superfood. I use it in salads and I juice it. But now we're finding out that it has a whole host of plant-based chemicals naturally occurring, including potassium. It stimulates the flow of bile from the liver into the gallbladder, making dandelion a key ingredient in liver cleanse formulas. It helps to break down liver fats and is effective as a diuretic in helping if you have swelling and edema. And the scientific community has been really looking at it and finding that it helps to suppress the growth and invasive behavior of several types of cancers. and it's a major antioxidant. Who knew all this about the dandelion? And they're writing it up now. The International Journal of Oncology, the Journal of Ethnopharmacology, the International Journal of Cancer. They've got good stuff to say about this. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to be hearing from our guest in just a moment. Our guest is Gerald Salante, talking about what he sees coming at us in the next 12 months and the next 2 years on all levels. And until Luke, and Luke is our engineer, until Luke lets me know that he is online, I'll continue on and give you some of the additional reports. This is one I thought was important. I'm going to share this with you. This is from Colin Greer from Alternet, and it says, "The Rise and the Fall of American Childhood. From the 1930s to the 1980s, childhood in America became, as we all know, a cherished space for youngsters to grow in. After 1980, and with increasing furor, that space has been under assault, and childhood has been terribly compromised." Now, let's look at the rise of childhood. First, we had child labor laws, then child civil protections, then full and secure employment for the parents. We were allowed to play as a mode of learning. After all, how many times in childhood did we play and invest in the development of stimulating play? Also, contraception and the pill allowed women choice and children to feel chosen. And feminism brought fatherhood back home and encouraged men to be robust partners in parenting. Protection from adult violence, including corporal punishment and child abuse, happened in the establishment of family and child courts, and access to quality education on an unprecedented scale, stimulated by competition with the Russians and influenced by deep psychology, the U.S. moved towards universal inclusion from elementary through post-secondary education. Yet, and here's what's interesting, yet once these gains were fully established in the top rungs of society, they began to shut down for the nation's children as a whole. For 50 years, the pendulum swung toward protecting children and guaranteeing a childhood for all. Then it began to swing back when less than half the population had securely achieved these benefits. So despite the language of going too far in the direction of protective, even a nanny state, we have never, in fact, gone far enough for the least privileged for us. Now here's the fall. Schools, once protected from the workplace, have been turned into a workplace of rigid rules, intense competition, and hence permanent stress. Even privileged children are educated in the fortress school mentality set in motion by Ronald Reagan's Nation at Risk and George Bush's No Child Left Behind Act. The pressure cooker of privileged schooling sets in motion a competitiveness, pitting kids against each other and ironically producing insecurity and trauma in the lives of all kids. Also, play is diminished in importance, and recreational activity in the school setting has become almost obsolete. Unemployment and welfare reform have made family life insecure, and with its greatest impact on the lowest 40% of income earners. Child consumption has skyrocketed as an advertising target, with violence all too often the trigger to this consumption. And despite our public recoil at child molestation, our media continue to sexualize children, especially girls. Failure to protect children from adult assault has become commonplace, and such as the church, Catholic Church in particular, and even in sports. In born-again settings, corporal punishment is on the rise, and that's not good. Children in poor and migrant communities are actually working on the land and in sweatshops, despite our laws to the contrary. Children in this population have less than a 10% chance of college education, so hunger and homelessness among these children is at an astronomically high level. And finally, challenges to contraception have reached national credibility, with no regard to the memory of unwanted or maimed children resulting from aborted abortions. The extension of the age of culpability for criminal behavior and the use of adult courts for teenage offenders is adding to the pain of children in parts of socioeconomic system. And also a lot of children are seeing their childhood simply disappear. The need for both parents to work in the face of our economic downturns, but at the same time, we're telling the parents you must be more productive and you have to have less pay, puts the lives of their children under stress. There was a time when we didn't suffer this way. So we are in the backlash after winning gains for childhood, and now we don't have it. I'm Gary Nall, and that's our issue of the day. Now let's go over and say hello to our guest standing by. I gave you his background earlier, Gerald Salante. The publication and the website is trendresearch.com. His journal is The Trends Journal. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gary.
Gerald, I would like for you to take a look at three areas and give us your predictions based upon studying trends, what you see likely to happen. First, what you see happening if either the people running for president win, what is the likely outcome? Secondly, 270 million Americans are living in extreme stress, financial deprivation, and over 100 million Americans are now considered poor. 18 million children are hungry. 48 million are on food stamps, and almost another 50 million are about to face homelessness because they're underwater in their mortgages and the value of that property is not coming back. So what do you say for the working class today when they've been made all these promises but nothing specific about their future? And finally, tell us what you see happening in cities like Washington, D.C. and Maryland, where we're broadcasting now, and Detroit. Let me just quote this before you start. This is from Economic Collapse. Turn out the lights. The largest U.S. cities are becoming cesspools of filth, decay, and wretchedness. I'll quote this. Once upon a time, the largest U.S. cities were the envy of the entire world. Sadly, that is no longer the case. Sure, there are areas in New York City, Boston, Washington, Los Angeles that are still absolutely beautiful. But for the most part, our major cities are rapidly rotting and decaying. Cities such as Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, Memphis, New Orleans, St. Louis, and Oakland were all once places where middle-class workers thrived and raised their families. Today, all of those cities are rapidly becoming transformed into cesspools of filth, decay, and wretchedness. Millions of good jobs have left our major cities in recent decades, and poverty has absolutely exploded. Basically, you can turn out the lights because the party's over. In fact, some major U.S. cities are literally turning out the lights. In Detroit, 40% of the street lights are broken, and the city cannot afford to repair them. So Mayor Bing has come up with a plan to cut the number of operating street lights in half and leave vast sections of the city totally in the dark at night. I wonder what will happen when the crime rate goes up. But don't look down on Detroit too much, because what is happening in Detroit will be happening where you live soon. Those are the issues. The forum is yours. Please address them.
Well, on the first issue, the likely outcome of the election, we had forecast a year ago, actually, over a year, October 7th, just about a year ago, 2011, that Obama would win, given who the front runners were at the time in the Republican Party. And they were Bachman, Perry, and Romney. And we hold by that forecast. This is going to be, we believe, one of the lightest turnouts of voting in modern history, probably, you know, in modern history. There's not a lot of enthusiasm for any of the candidates, or either the two candidates. And it reminds me, of course, of when I say either of the candidates, Mark Twain's wonderful quote, that if voting meant anything, they wouldn't let us do it. And that's really what it comes down to. People are actually going to go out and vote for a lesser of two evils when in real life they would never have a partner, do business with, or have relationships with a lesser of two evils. Evil is evil. And when you look at what differences it is going to make who gets in, it really comes down to who's going to destroy things slower. And it's a neck-and-neck race. Their policies are essentially the same, only the rhetoric is different. And that's not rhetoric. When you look at Obama, all of those liberals out there, I guess you missed the story yesterday where he's going to, he's pushing for passage, repassage of the draconian surveillance acts that rob us of our Fourth Amendment rights of search and seizure. He's also, of course, now he's ratcheting up the talk and sending, look at Libya. I mean, my God, how could anybody not see that this was going to happen? And the unrest throughout the Middle East, of which he keeps fomenting, and Romney is just going to step it up one more notch. And then again, you look at the records, not one head rolled on Wall Street from the greatest bank robbery in world history where the banks were doing the robbing. So as it comes to the presidential reality show, both contestants are basically the same. One sings and dances a little much better than the other one, and it's only a show, and Obama is the teleprompter champ. On the other issues, as you mentioned, the 200 and something million Americans, new studies coming out showing how many people now, it's over 10% more, put themselves in lower class and lower middle class than before. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, one of the contributors to the Trends Journal and a former assistant treasury secretary under Ronald Reagan, just penned a piece in which he shows that median household income has really fallen to not lowest levels as they're showing now to 1989 levels, but more in terms of 1960s levels, in terms of how much wealth has been drained out of the average family. And it's just getting worse. There is no turning this around using the policies that that both political parties have in place. When you talk about what's going on in Maryland and D.C. and Detroit and St. Louis and Cincinnati, it's virtually every major city in this country, and minor ones as well, are decrepit and decaying. You see the filth in the streets. And I've been around a long time. It was never like this. You see the crumbling infrastructure. That's not rhetoric. I mean, getting on Amtrak is like speeding into the 20th century. Well, you know, when you travel the world, you see how far behind we are. And what is the talk? Well, again, tune into today's talk. It's war talk. That's all they talk. And it's what President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned the American people of, that the military-industrial complex was going to take over the nation and rob us of the genius of our scientists, the sweat of our labors, and the future of our children. So it's all come to pass. And when you see how desperate it is, Gary, look what America's public enemy number one did today, Osama bin Bernanke. That's right, the head of the Federal Reserve, who has been printing all of this digital money and in doing so devaluing our dollar. They announced more QE3. See the price of gold? No surprise. I had said, and I've said on your show over and over again, during this election year, they're going to pump up the economy with more cheap money and gold prices will go up. Gold is up, as I speak now, $35 on the day. So we can see what the future is going to bring, because Osama bin Bernanke also is signaling that they're going to keep interest rates at the zero rate until, about 2015. What does that mean? It means it kills savings initiatives for everybody out there that in the old days used to squirrel away, sock away money for a rainy day, and you would get, no, you'd get a reasonably good interest rate on it for putting it in the bank. No more. You'll get a 0.5% or so as the banks loan it out at usury rates. So where are things going? The working class, there isn't any. We become the plantation class. Look at the jobs that are being created. Oh, we only lost about 750,000 full-time jobs since March. Oh, look at the new numbers that came out today on how many more people put in for unemployment. Yeah, they went up unexpectedly. Unexpectedly by whom? What is the average person going to do? The average person, as I see it, in order to survive these times, don't buy one thing that you don't need to buy. Stop eating all this crappy food and buy, and the big lie is about how much organic costs. Yeah, it costs more, but guess what? You eat a lot less because of the higher value of nutrition in it. And so you start eating smart. Stop wasting money. Don't send your kid to college to learn how to become a photographer or art history if you can't afford it and you're not from the 1%. Only send your child to school for advanced education if it's going to bring in an advanced income with jobs and skills that are going to be needed in the future. Number three, don't buy anything that you don't need, particularly from foreign countries. The season is ending now, of course, with the farmers' markets, but buy as much local as you can. And do everything you can to join in with your neighbors to build your community. That's why I'm up here in Kingston, New York. It's a small community. You know what the people here want? They're all happy, the store owners, the entrepreneurs, when everyone is doing well. There's not a jealousy. There's a camaraderie. Those are the things I see that can only push this forward.
I appreciate those insights. Now let's go to a few others. First, I would like the American people to know that they have not been given the truth about these quantitative easings. And also, this is not the third, because uncounted is the secret $16 trillion the Federal Reserve gave to just 20 institutions, mainly banks, like Goldman Sachs got $800 billion, then Citigroup Bank America together got $4.5 trillion, and others down the road got money at zero interest. Now, why doesn't anyone talk about why that is not a debt, since there's no interest and we've given it to companies and they haven't paid it back, but we don't count that $16 trillion. And we only knew that there was $16 trillion in 22,000 transactions because Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, got the legislation passed so that the Fed would be audited. So this is actually from the audit. That's one $16 trillion that we didn't know about. Then we don't count the $1 trillion in student loans that should be completely eliminated. Then we don't count the $1 trillion in credit card debt. But we do count, as part of our gross domestic product and why we're growing, what people buy on credit cards. And I'm saying, that's not the way it should be. People should be able to use disposable income, their savings. That then could legitimately be part of a growing economy. If you're buying something on credit card, you're incurring the debt and the interest on that debt when you buy that. So that's a debt. That's not an asset. Then we don't include the $23 trillion in corporate debt, nor do we include the over $3 trillion in state debt, nor local debt, nor do we include the underfunded and unfunded entitlements that are going to be coming due. After all, look at the 35 million Americans who are seniors using Medicare. Then look in the next 10 years and you're up to almost 75 million. Who's supposed to pay for that? So that now, if you add this up, just on these debts that I just mentioned, and plus our $16 trillion in federal debt, now you're up to $122 trillion in debt. Now, our gross domestic product is $14.4 trillion. So you're looking at approximately 600 to 700% debt against gross domestic product. And I'm not even including the $6 trillion that we have borrowed from other countries, including China, $1.8 trillion, $800 billion from Japan, that we have no intention of paying back. Then you're up to, now you're up to eight times debt, 800% debt to gross domestic product. Now, since our manufacturing base is not coming back, we've lost 58,000 factories, and since all of our treaties are based upon corporate America, and globalization, making sure that anything we make is made cheaply in another country and hence no one could compete against that product brought back in the United States, then where are the jobs going to come from? I don't see any resurgence in manufacturing. I only see the small business people being the backbone for the future. But why can't we be honest about the debt and the fact that these stimuluses have not helped the American public? It helped a different economy, the economy that's too big to fail, which did not trickle down to help open up loans, low interest and zero interest loans for small businesses to readjust the mortgage rate of a person's house to the actual value of their mortgage. So therefore, a person's house wouldn't be worth $100,000 and their mortgage $200,000. The mortgage comes down to the value of their house and then allow people a chance to pay rent to live there instead of paying an interest rate on a mortgage. Why can't we deal with any of this? And why isn't any of this that I just discussed being talked about by the economists or the broadcasters or the politicians?
Well, the reason it's not talked about by the broadcasters is because, I mean, who controls the corporate media? You know, I mean, they don't want that. That's not a story they want to get out because they're all part of it. Hey, remember when that wonderful other Democratic president, Bill Clinton, deregulated the communications industry and made it possible for all the consolidation? You know, they forgot about that one. And he, I mean, the fact is, Gary, everything that you said just really boils down into one word. I could answer why not in one word. Fascism. The merger of state and corporate powers. The bigs have taken over everything. They've taken over, what is it? I just mentioned communications. Take a look at agriculture. You keep going down the list. Even military, consolidated. How about retail? Oh, yeah, wonderful Walmart. How many people have they put out of business, entrepreneurs? I think the estimates are around, you know, 80, 100,000, probably much higher. You know, when I was a kid, there were two Macy's, one in Harold Square and one in Yonkers. You know, now they're everywhere. They're in every there were Home Depots and Lowe's. There used to be a thing, little boys and girls and children of all ages, called hardware stores that every local community had. Oh, and I love hearing Mittens Romney out there bragging as a vulture capitalist and a hedge fund specialist, how he created jobs with the consolidation of killing all of those stationery stores. Again, some of you out there may be able to remember those if you're old enough, before we had Staples. Oh, he created wonderful jobs. You could have a job at Staples. So what's happened is, Gary, these aren't corporations anymore. These are hedge fund operations. The entire country is controlled by the fascist corporate, quote, corporate slash government matrix. That's all it is.
Okay,
that's why you're not hearing about any of
okay.
this. You name the sector, it's controlled, it's an oligopoly.
All right. Two other areas I'm interested in. We do not pay attention to any of the human rights movements in the European Union. We never hear a word about how well Iceland is doing when it refused to pay the European Union and the English and the Dutch banks back debt They simply said no, so they could stabilize their economy. Otherwise, they'd have put all their population into debt pinage for the rest of their lives. So now their economy is growing again. But now we have Greece. And the austerity program that the corrupt politicians in Greece put in place means that they don't suffer, they're wealthy. But all the other people of Greece do. That is also true for Spain, and there are millions of people suffering in Spain. The unemployment rate in Spain is almost 40%, highest of any of the European Union nations for population. So they're beginning to say no more, and they're going to start throwing out their governments completely. I see this happening in Ireland, Spain, Portugal, and Greece. I don't see it happening in Italy at this point, though it could. And then that's going to have reverberations here. So that's my first question. What do you see happening in the European zone? And then what do you see happening in the United States concerning the 100 million abject poor and gangs and kidnappings and violence and the ghettoization of suburban areas that we would never have thought possible just a couple of years ago?
On the Eurozone, yesterday was a big day in Europe. It was the day that the German Supreme Court ruled whether it was within the German Constitution or not for the Europeans to stay into the European Stability Mechanism, as they call it, the ESM, and giving Germans the liability on their behalf of some 190 billion euros. And of course the German Supreme Court, as with any Supreme Court, they bend to the power interests. So it wasn't an issue of it whether or not it being against the Constitution. It was how would it affect the Eurozone. So what they did was they made it, quote, legal for this scam to continue, because the reality is, and it goes back to what's going on throughout Europe, is that this money isn't going into bailing out the countries, it's bailing out the, quote, the banks and those so-called investors. So the funds, all of these funds, and you're talking about austerity, while they starve the people, this money goes directly to the accounts of the financial investors who are now being repaid their loans in full plus interest. And at the same time, they're pushing the people of their countries deeper into poverty. It's a complete takeover. The banks have taken over the world. This ruling did, it took power out of the Bundestag and moved it up into Brussels. You're going to see a complete centralization of Europe under the banking interest station in Brussels. Sovereignty is going to be lost. So that's one thing. And when you're looking and talking about what's going on in the Eurozone and the class warfare that's breaking out, you know, you cannot, you also have to look at what's going on around the rest of the world. What's going on in Tunisia, and what's going on in Egypt and Yemen and in Bahrain and in Libya, and of course the civil war that the United States and its allies have started in Syria. You know, a lot of this has to do with the money being concentrated at the top. And you know my saying, when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. What we're looking at, Gary, is the beginning of the first great war of the 21st century. They're using this incident, this flashpoint of an Islamic movie that some moron produced as the reasoning for all of these disruptions that are going on in Egypt and Tunisia and Libya and the killing of the ambassador to Libya. That's like saying World War I began because the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. It's all of the American imperialism. It's all of what the United States and NATO and the European countries have been doing to destabilize the Middle East. So what we're seeing is these are, when you put all the pieces together, and now, of course, what's going on in the United States with this growing underclass, and you look at the numbers that just came out. The United States ranks near the bottom of young people being born into poor families that could move into a higher level. These are OECD facts. So what does it mean? It means more drug wars, more gang wars, and more of America turning major cities turning into Mexico cities. Well, you're going to see kidnapping, and you're going to see more violence, and the response is going to be by the lunatic, psychopathic politicians and sociopaths. You know, we got to crack down on crime. Yeah, that's what we got to do. As, of course, the people that have been born into nothing, that have nothing, and have lost those entrepreneurial opportunities that used to exist in the United States at one time, no longer exists, resort to what they can only do best. Crime pays. And I'm not saying that as a nasty, throwaway line. Crime pays. If you're one of the top bankers in the country, crime pays. If you're John Corzine of MF Global, who robbed segregated accounts, including mine, crime pays. If you're the head of Countrywide Mutual that had all those fraudulent mortgages, crime pays. So the people see that crime pays, so they're going to get into a paying job.
I appreciate you coming on and sharing your points of view, Gerald. I'm my guest, Gerald Celente, Celente. The website is trendresearch.com. His publication, The Trends Journal. He's very impassioned, but he has been right on hundreds of issues, so it's worth paying attention. Gerald, all the best to you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Gary.
As we come up to the last 60 seconds in the program, first, I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. We're all trying to help WPFW, and one way we can help PFW is let people know that I'm back here 5 days a week, 3 to 4 p.m., and that will help us when we come to our fund drive, which is coming up shortly. And also every day, interesting programs on health, the environment, and social issues with a progressive perspective. I have hundreds of articles free and videos free. Go to garynull.com, GARYNULL.com, or progressiveradionetwork.com just to get up to speed on everything. I look forward till tomorrow, and we'll have open calls tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.